Hi, this is Michael Uslan. You're listening to Batman on Film.
Welcome to the BOF Satellite Show, episode number 6, Toy Story. As you can tell by the tone of my voice, I am not Rick Hsu. I am BOF senior contributor Ryan Lauer, and joining me is another BOF senior contributor named Ryan, Mr. Ryan Haas. Ryan Haas, welcome to the satellite show. It's odd that I'm on this end and you're on that end of a satellite
show. Somebody is poisoning the water hole. There's a snake in my boots. To infinity and beyond. Golly, Bob, howdy. I'm excited for this Toy Story show.
Well done, out the gate.
I had to get them all out right off the bat.
Oh, there's many more. Thanks for joining me on this toyetic adventure. I don't know.
That's a bad word for Batman fans.
Exactly.
Schumacher.
Joel Schumacher is directing this this podcast episode. But yeah, thanks for joining. I know this has been like a long thing that I've talked with you about, and we share a love for Toy Story, and this hopefully, if life doesn't get in the way, this will be the first of many quick discussions that you and I will have on the whole Toy Story series, because we are both avid lovers of Toy Story. And I think I'm the biggest one that pushed it instantly when Rick had floated around the idea of the satellite show, and I said, I want Toy Story. And he said, okay, have at it.
Yeah. And for a long time, he was like, I want to be on the show. I want to be on that show. I got to be on that show. I'm part of that. And then I was like, you know, Rick, Lauer's going to do one episode like per movie. He's like, I'm out. I can't do that. Who wants to listen to 87 shows about Toy Story movies? I can just do one. There should just be one show. I'm like, well, whose show is this, Rick? And he was like, good point. Lauer, you do it. I don't care.
Yeah, that's true. And I said that to Bill, and Bill was like, dick shoes. You do as many Toy Story episodes as you want. So you're right. We're going to do 87 episodes on the Toy Story franchise. We're going to start dissecting every single character. Mr. Haas, so Toy Story itself is probably held in greatest esteem as one of, if not the best Pixar movies, animated movies, cartoon movies. And you and I get really into the behind the scenes stuff on mm-hmm. movies that are made. And we figured Toy Story, we should discuss kind of why it's held in such high regard. Why was it such a huge turning point for animation? And it basically was the big kahuna that got Pixar going.
Right.
Can you explain or kind of share real quickly, like what's your connection with this movie? The first one. We'll just stick to the first one.
Yeah. So we don't just have the same first name. We're very similar in age. So like we were,
maybe 6 months younger than me. Maybe.
Yeah, something like that. So, so Toy Story, the original Toy Story came out in 1995, correct? Same year as Batman Forever, you know, and the same summer, right? So I remember both of those being very, you know, marketed right towards my demographic at the time. I was a target audience for both of those movies. A 7-year-old kid, you know, in the summer of 95, your two big movies were going to be Toy Story and Batman. Was Space Jam, was Space Jam 96? Was that the year after?
I think so. But also
shows how prepared we are.
Around the, I didn't exactly look up the year Space Jam came out when we were going to talk about Toy Story, so we can give ourselves a little break.
Yeah, Space Jam 96. There you go.
Okay. The original Jumanji, though,
was
95. And when you finish up, I'll tell you
that too.
The connection with Jumanji. So carry on.
So, yeah, I mean, I remember it being it felt like a big deal at the time. And I couldn't, as a kid with all this budding technology, I didn't really understand. Like, I knew it was cool and I was excited about it. I saw it in the theater, but I just remember this discussion around it, even then, that young, about like how revolutionary it was and how big of a deal it was. And looking back, of course it was the very first completely computer generated feature length movie. Luckily it turned out to be a good movie, and it, you know, launched an entire genre, subgenre of filmmaking, for better or worse, that has like transformed filmmaking, the film industry, and animation too, going from 2D animation to 3D animation. And you see that echoed through films. You see that echoed in video games. Video games were going through the same kind of transformation at the same time, going from the more 2D pixelated graphics to, you know, in 1995, 96, that's when you got to see video game systems like the Nintendo 64 and the Sony PlayStation coming out, where things just moved to 3D because that was the thing. And there were growing pains, you know, in both the both industries for that. Things have leveled out, and creativity holds no bars as much as it did back in the day. But going back to Toy Story, it was a pioneer for that entire industry. And it's put Pixar on the map, and it's one of those movies that was so influential, beyond it being a movie by itself. But it just so happens to also be a good movie and launch a good, you know, mainstay franchise for Pixar, for Disney, and the whole animated movie industry.
For sure. So this movie actually came out on my 9th birthday. So cool. I felt extremely special that the anniversary is on November 22nd of Toy Story. But as I've said many times, I grew up in small town Indiana, to where we had to drive to go to a theater, and not like 5 minutes down the road or anything. We had to go to another state. That was the closest one. Granted, that was like 15 minutes, but up in Michigan. And we weren't always going to theaters, you know, an every weekend sort of deal. When we would go to it'd have to be a family thing of me, my parents, my brother, all of us, you know, want to see a movie. And Jumanji was coming out three weeks later, basically, from Toy Story. And that became the movie we were going to wait and see. So I had to sit and hear from friends who went and saw Toy Story, which looked like you'd already said, target audience was me. And when I'd see, you know, stuff on TV for this, and I just thought it looked so different from the Disney VHS tapes that I was putting in daily at home, you know, it just looked totally different. And it went in, we had to wait for it to come out on VHS, in which, you know, how they sold like the miniature novelizations of it too. I couldn't wait that when I got Christmas money, I bought the novelization just so I could look at, because they would include, you know, like 8 pages of stills of the movie in the middle. That's all that I did. I didn't read the book. I just kept going to those pages and constantly looking at those pages. And then when it finally did come out, when we got it, I was just like blown away because of, like you said, didn't look like anything that I'd watched before. And not to mention, I was one that I didn't want song and dance a ton in my movies. And here was an animated movie that was not
the
same.
I'm not a musical person. Sorry, Eric Holtzman.
Yeah. We don't love La La Land. Okay. Sorry, Eric Holtzman. But that was something else in how the songs, I mean, at that point, you know, I was just listening, but you can start to make the connections. And as an adult, you can make the connections that they're scrapping the song and dance, but instead creating songs that are contributing to the story of what we're watching, and not like heavy handed, but Randy
you
Newman.
Got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
I won't sing the others. I had a bad Randy Newman impression, but that's just to me of how it stood out, and it was so different. And then it was just it was great to see when I grew up and started to read about more of the journey of getting that to the screen. And you could really understand how and why this made such a great impact when it was released, you know, in the United States and around the world. Around the world, it made over like $300 million, almost $400 million worldwide, which was huge, you know, in the 90s.
Got Academy Award nominations.
Yeah, absolutely. And spawned, as we later see, you know, 4 movies, a ton of shorts, TV specials. But the movie itself, like, it still stands the test of time, because at its core, it's a good movie. and any yes. behind the scenes stuff that you watch. I mean, that's what everybody, you know, there's interviews with directors and stuff and the impressions that it made. And they say at the core, it's just a good movie.
Yeah.
And that will always stand the test of time. And of course, I think if you look back now, maybe the animation isn't, you know, it's 95 compared to 2021 animation. Sure, there's improvements and stuff, but yeah. the movie is just still good. And I think also something that we see is this is like the only movie out of all of them, the movies where it's like Buzz and Woody are actually together.
I know it is interesting. I mean, yeah, the, it's one of those things where it's although it's a very pioneering movie, the one reason why it like it's one of those stories that is they were tailoring the movie and what the story was to what the technology was good at the time. Mm-hmm. And 3D rendering like at the time, which was of course pioneered by Pixar. They started out doing shorts and things like that. Mm-hmm. 3D rendering at the time was really good at doing plasticky, shiny objects, you know, because there were that's just how the rendering models were tailored at the time. You didn't have like today, the big talk is like, you know, real time reflections and ray tracing and like all these new, you know, physically based rendering, PBR, like, that all didn't exist back then. You had like blend shaders and Phong shaders and, you know, lighting, and it was slow to, you know, rendering was slow and laborious and the techniques weren't as developed. So it was, the technology was really well suited towards like inanimate shiny objects. And so like turning that, you know, tech into like, oh, well, we can animate toys, you know, mm-hmm. make toys and animate. Like it was tailored toward that, you know, interiors and things like that. So, you know, when you go back and look at it, that's one of the things you can look at when it gets outside of that toyetic realm, when they start showing humanoids or, you know, the dogs and stuff. That's where you're like, oh, that's where you might wince a little bit just because of the complexity and the sure. fourth wall breakingness. And it's interesting to see Pixar actually, not to get too much into the other movies, but to see Pixar purposefully, I think, revisit some of those ideas in later movies, like in Toy Story 4, you like get to see like the cat, like, and it looks like amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Right on cue, right?
Yep, that was my cat. that was he heard it.
But it was unplanned. But yeah, so, and even it, like, I remember I texted you or sent you in the chat, like I remembered getting, I couldn't remember which movie it was, but it was for the first Toy Story, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, getting like a flip books. You were talking about the, getting the novelization. I might still have it somewhere in some box at my parents' house. A couple of flip books that came in Cinnamon Toast Crunch where you could like flip through it and watch the, I think I had the one that had the scene with Buzz jumping off the bed onto the ball. And it's kind of a cool thing because you have this analog flipbook animation of 3D animation. Mm-hmm. And even going back a little bit, this I remember seeing, maybe, I guess since this came out in November, I think I started seeing, I remember seeing, I don't know which movies it was. I don't know if the previews were in the summer, like with Batman or not. But I do remember being in the theater watching something that year and seeing trailers. So the first trailers for Toy Story and people being like, oh, this is different. This is new. What is this? Yeah. And the trailers were playing up that too, because I'm pretty sure it had, you know, that same scene with like Buzz revealing himself to the other toys and going around the, you know, Andy's room and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about the, you know, the animation itself. And mm-hmm. I've always said that I think Pixar would just be a blast of a place to work at, because in watching for this too, and they would say that their quote unquote, you know, research would be trips to Toys R Us and just going and playing with toys and trying to see, like, you know, action figure movements. And that was their taking notes. They'd grab the company credit card and just spend a ton of money on toys and then take them back to the office and play with them. They were, you know, their research on how, on different movements also, like the Green Army Men, they would take an old pair of sneakers onto a skate and duct tape them to a skateboard and then just try and walk and move. And they would, and there's video of that. I'm sure you can find it online too. And that was like their work day, in which they all just said that basically they're a bunch of kids who just never grew up and they were animators. And I thought that that really, that shone through in the fun of the movie as well. I mean, aside from like the buddy movie at its core and all and those kind of themes of just like the fun of the smallest details, you know, the Green Army Men movements, you know, for example, and then the bouncing on the ball up into the, you know, up onto the fan and like just the smallest details. I think that Pixar, that was most people's introduction to Pixar that we've just grown accustomed to now of paying attention to the smallest details in their movies.
Right, right. Like the Easter in shot Easter eggs. And then and Pixar loves to do that. And there's that longstanding tradition of they'll always tease what their next movie is, or like,
and the nerds like us movies. That's what we're looking for when watching their new movies too, is looking for where's the Pizza Planet truck, or where's, you know, where's a Bugs Life character in the background here, or something, something like that. And of course, people who, with a lot of time on their hands, have created theories, a Pixar theory, and connecting the movies with the Easter eggs and stuff, which is, it's funny.
Cinematic universe.
Yeah. But it's fun too. I think a fun part with the creation of this movie is Tin Toy, which is the 1988 short. That's their, I think that, well, I mean, Luxor, was it Luxor? Is that the desk lamp? That was before Tin Toy. Right. So the lamp that we see for the Pixar, in every movie, I think that got them attention. And the 1988's Tin Toy was the one that really got more attention. And I know I just keep saying more attention on Pixar, more attention, but there's, you know, there's escalation here. Like it's a building timeline for Pixar that after, which some people don't understand. I don't know if it's still their formula, but for a long time, it took Pixar 4 years to make a movie.
Right.
Because this technology was so kind of new and advanced.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, that's the thing too. This was so big and it was so marketed toward kids also, but the technology, I remember being in school, and when you would get like the Scholastic book fairs and things like that, like I was so, I mean, yeah, I mean, it kickstarted. It was definitely a component of me getting interested in 3D graphics and ultimately becoming a real-time video game VFX artist myself. Like it's one of those formative movies. I remember being exposed to information as a kid that was kid-facing about Toy Story through things like books you would get at like the book fair and stuff like that. I remember seeing or reading some specials or something where they were like, talking about how slow the rendering is, they can only do 7 minutes a week, you know, of the movie. And I'm like, well, just getting wrapping your head around like, how is this made? How does this work? Like, what is all this technology?
I mean, I know that they, with Tin Toy was their inspiration. They were like, what if we do a live or a full length movie this way? And so it's funny because that spawned that idea in which they were thinking, well, what if we do a buddy picture with two toys and Tinny, who's the toy in Tin Toy? They were thinking like he will be the star of his full length movie, in which like the initial idea was Tinny goes on vacation with the owner, gets lost at a rest stop, and finds and meets a ventriloquist dummy. So that was like the birth of Toy Story, and that was their what they were rolling with. And then that ended up changing of like, well, we need to come up with our own. With our own figure. So then that evolved into Lunar Larry. And then that turned into Timbus from Lore. And then eventually became Buzz Lightyear.
Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah. And that just, looking back on it now, it's like, I mean, Lunar Larry is a fun alliteration, but I mean, Buzz Lightyear just, there's that breakthrough moment. And then Woody himself.
Because it has that little tangential connection to the real world with Buzz, you know, like Buzz Aldrin, Buzz Lightyear. Tim Allen at the time, like all those things, and being a a toy that doesn't exist in real life but plausibly could, and making him the cool new toy surrounded by all these more traditional classic type or toys of yesteryear for, you know, like in Andy's room, as in these could be hand-me-down toys or toys from his dad, which they obviously expand on in later movies, yeah. which is great storytelling potential. And then of course those things do get made in real life. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember going to, I mean, that's just how the cultural impact of the movie, like how big it was. I remember going to, you know, we keep talking about how like, oh yeah, the BOF Batman on Film Satellite Show. It's like, why do you have a movie? Why do you have a podcast about Toy Story? Because Burger King has chicken sandwiches. Well, there here is. We go. Yeah, like Burger I remember King, like... going to Burger King and them having amazing Toy Story toys. I remember maybe even having to pay a little extra with a meal and I got like a legit full like Woody doll, you know, just yeah. like in the movie, and yeah. seeing a real Buzz Lightyear in real life. I mean, those things were just awesome.
My family did not eat Burger King, but I demanded that we go and we get them. So they were yeah. like a 90s 6-inch plush, right?
Yeah.
Of like Buzz and Woody.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It was good stuff. Like, yeah, I would only go to Burger King for special things, and they kept having the good tie-ins. They had the Toy Story stuff. They had the Pokemon, the first movie stuff. Yeah.
Well, you said
that now they have Surge Zero. Like that's today. You're getting me hungry, Lauer.
Okay. Well, it's almost drinks. Lunchtime, so there you go. the comment that you just made about like a, you know, old toys and such. So director, original story contributor John Lasseter, actually, Woody was kind of based off of his Casper from his childhood, in which in videos, you know, it shows he pulls like the drawstring and he can't really understand what Casper's saying, but he's like, you know, this has been my lifelong toy. He understands. Oh, he just said blah, blah, blah. And mm-hmm. when you see that video, you can understand how that Woody evolved from that idea. And the link of Andy in the movie linked to Woody, his favorite toy growing up. But then here's the new, the shiny, the future of toys, but can't get rid of that lifelong attachment to who you grew up with. And I think that's a really cool connection too, that I think is very relatable, was very relatable to me. Of the realization of like new toys. Oh, wait, eventually though, I don't want to forget about my old toys, and then evolving out of playing with toys, but then being like, but wait, these are my toys I grew up with. And I just think that on a child's level, yeah. you know, that's just very relatable.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and then here we are.
Not just relatable, it's relatable. Yeah, it's relatable. Toys. And yeah, but that's why it's so relatable. Not beyond generations, at the time mm-hmm. and now, everybody can remember or identify with playing with toys.
Yeah,
you know, and now it's in this crazy thing where we saw Toy Story as kids, played with the toys, and now some people like myself have a kid playing with Toy Story things, and the movies touch on that as well. And it's just crazy how the relevance comes back around and for good stories and mm-hmm. nostalgia. And it's kind of a weird cyclical thing at this point to see how, and that's the kind of interesting thing about the franchise as it's gone along, which we can get into as we talk about more of the sequels, but just as an overview, how the idea of even a Pixar movie having a sequel was mm-hmm. a huge, like, this will never happen, or maybe it shouldn't happen. And Toy Story, being the oldest Pixar movie, the original Pixar movie, how they really, although there have been 4 Toy Story films, they've pulled their punches in terms of like not just like pumping out sequels. Like they yeah. only do them when the time is right, and if they feel like they have a good story for it. You know, there's been yep. 4 movies, but 95, 99, 2010, 2019, and then they've been able to make, you know, the TV specials and stuff like that. So there's been a lot of Toy Story stuff, but it's always, they don't do it, I don't feel, unless it's unless they think the quality's there and the reasoning is good. So
for sure. I want to touch on some of the characters, and I think headlining it, so it was kind of fun to watch that ultimately, you know, how the tin toy itself had evolved. So did their ventriloquist dummy,
into Woody with the idea of the frontier of space and the frontier of the West together, two very different types of characters. And I think that too, especially looking back now, is an element like that's a really interesting concept. And then they said that they just thought Tom Hanks just feels like the voice for Woody. And I find it fun that what they did is they, when they did their animation test, they grabbed one of his lines out of Turner and Hooch and put it underneath. And that's how they presented it to Tom Hanks, in which that sold Tom Hanks right away, in which he got like, yeah, this makes total sense.
Right.
And then Tim Allen, who in the 90s, of course, was quite the buzz. he said that he put a unique spin on Buzz that they didn't, you know, that they didn't have in mind with the character, but then they thought like, oh, this one just makes sense. And I think when you attach, because I mean, at that point too, you did not have famous faces
this,
of
this
Hollywood again, voicing again for, characters.
For better or worse, this also introduced the idea of a movie in the theater that is, you know, computer generated or not, or like a feature length movie that you see in the theater, we're going to have Hollywood actors play the major roles. And sometimes that's great. Sometimes it's not, but this is like one of those gold standard things of like the firing on all cylinders and it being, and it working for the movie. And then the supporting cast, like,
oh my gosh,
come on, Jim Varney, you know, I want this
I'll to say be your a, boy, Ernest.
I know. I want this to be a backdoor pilot for Ernest, the Ernest Satellite shows. So
they're coming.
Tweet at us.
2022.
bug the hell out of Rick Hsu and I guess me on Twitter at BOF Show if you want some Ernest Satellite shows. But yeah,
like Jim Varney and voicing amazing. Him in such a, I mean, we know what he's like in Ernest, and yet listening to him here, who would not want a real dog version of Slinky Dog, you know, like he brought a great like warmth and fun to Slink.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I, as we all know, of course, John Ratzenberger, the Pixar guy, the voice in Ham, he was a great, and that was a great performance to bounce off of.
And who can forget Rex, the dinosaur?
Well, I loved Rex because he was a dinosaur. But that guy's
and he
voice,
talks just like you, Lauer.
Well, sounds just
welcome
like
welcome to the Batman Book Club.
The Batman Book Club. Wallace Shawn, who's got, I mean, he's a face that when you see the face, he,
you know, or you
know, like, oh, him before. That guy.
Yes.
Annie Potts did the voice of Bo Peep, who I mean, I knew her from Designing Women. Yes. It was weird that me at my age,
then, show coming
I was
soon.
Watching Designing Women. Yeah. Let's get that going. I mean, and then Arlie Ermey is a sergeant of the Green Army Men.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. But then, of course, maybe the funniest man of all time, Don Rickles as Potato Head.
Oh, my gosh.
Scene stealer. And not only that, he was just funny. When I finally saw that movie at 9 years old, he was just funny. But then as you get older and like the jokes that you pick up on, and like it took me forever to pick up on the, what are you looking at? Yeah, hockey puck. I'm like, oh my God, that's a Don Rickles thing, which I wasn't exposed to until late teens, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
His, these subtle jokes of while, you know, the toys are gathered and they're speaking, he pops his lips off and he taps his butt with them. And then Mr. Spell's behind. Right over my head.
Yeah.
As a kid. And then I got older. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Like I just, and then not to mention he speaks his mind. He's kind of a dick. But he's just purely entertaining the whole time. And I love Potato Head. And it was noticeable later
and
on, especially later on when he's Toy Story 4, when he's not around. It's like,
And that's another one of those things, like just content wise in that it gets established in Toy Story and you see in the other movies about, it's not just, oh yeah, we can bring parents to sit, get the butts in the seats because it's an actor they know. It's like, no, like, they do a really incredible job content wise of like, if you're a kid and you're just watching, kind of like the 60s Batman show where it's like, you're a kid and you can watch the movie and get something out of it. But if you're an adult, like there's not like super overt innuendos, but just like more of a depth to the content and the humor that you'll only appreciate more as you age.
Yes, exactly. And the just ass kisser. I mean, come right. on. It's just right. funny. It's just right. it's just funny. Well done. you know that I love to play favorites. So I want to ask you a couple favorites.
Oh, gosh.
Remember.
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember what, I mean, if you have a different one, but what your favorite part of the original Toy Story movie was slash is?
My favorite part of the original movie.
Yeah.
My favorite scene, when you say that, my gut reaction scene is, I feel like, I love it when you watch movies and you get enough into the characters to where it feels like the whole movie's been building to something, or like uh-huh. this only works because they've done such a good job to this point. And that's that scene in Toy Story, in the original Toy Story, to me is where Woody and Buzz are at such a low point. They're trapped in Sid's house across the street, and where Woody's finally kind of coming around to like, oh man, I really messed up. I gotta fix all this. And where he's talking to the other toys across the street, you know, across to the next house. And yeah. he's pretending like he's Buzz, and he's got Buzz's like severed hand, like patting him on the back. We're best buds. And then he like yeah. moves away, and they see that he's actually fellas. Holding.
To infinity yeah. and beyond. I mean, the worst Buzz impression.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
yet it fooled them somehow.
And then he messes up at the end, and they see that he's holding his hand, and everybody freaks out. I just,
what are you trying to pull? Nothing.
Yeah. that whole moment is just amazing to me. That's probably my favorite moment in the whole movie.
I mean, I can't remember what I loved the most, you know, watching it other than the whole freaking movie. But I think pure magic to me was definitely when Andy leaves the room after the opening scene, and then all the toys just come alive and start moving. Because mm-hmm. I know at my age too, it was kind of, you know, there's such a, like, that was so relatable even to me at, you know, at nine of, yeah, that's me with all my toys combining the varieties, Batman's universe played with G.I. Joe, gosh. Which also played with Looney Tunes, which also played with the Ninja Turtles.
as a father for a 4 year old, a 4.5 year old, I love seeing that right now. Like I have, you know, and that's what happened. Like we have things now like Batman versus Ninja Turtles, and you have yeah. legit toys based off of those properties, which is just mind blowing. But like to see my daughter, like her favorite thing to do right now is to take Super Mario Legos and make them interact yes. with the Hallmark Batman 66 Batcave thing. Like the doors will open, the Legos will go in it. Like weird interactions, but that's, you know, but they interact. That's how things get played with these days, yeah. like with my daughter. And it's amazing to see that kind of stuff.
We all create the multiverse, and we don't have basically lawful restrictions. Okay.
It's exactly.
We do what we want. And yeah. And I just remember even at that age of like, even thinking of like, wait, did the toys really come alive when I leave the room? Oh my God. It was amazing. Yeah. Do you have a favorite character from the original Toy Story?
I'm going to say Slinky Dog because I love Jim Varney. I even knew yeah. as a 7-8 year old when I was watching it, that Ernest was Slinky Dog. And I loved that crossover. So I'm definitely going to go there.
You know, this is always tough for me because it's a decision that nobody asks me to make except myself.
Right.
But I'm always Buzz torn. Or Woody. Oh, no, no. Well, I can't decide between those two.
Oh,
so then I totally skip. And my lifetime allegiance to a T-Rex.
Oh,
so I love Rex. Right. Mm-hmm. But then also Potato Head is just such a smart ass.
Yeah,
that hits me too. That I'm always torn between the two. So I'll just flip a coin, and
it's fun to see. It's fun to walk into a store and see a regular Mr. Potato Head and just always imagine him as Don Rickles.
Exactly,
just an asshole.
Oh, that's right. I mean, that's what's funny. And that's where they were really smart in touching on familiar toys that can be like timeless. Of you have a new potato head coming out now in 2021, but we're going to see it and we're going to be Toy Story. Like we link to Toy Story. So, I mean, I don't know. I'll say today it's Rex barely, but then tomorrow I'll watch Toy Story again and I'll be like, man, I don't know. I think it's Potato Head. Because he's
thank you for choosing me. Oh,
and I mean, I didn't really touch on it too much. Was Potato Head and Ham, their constant bickering.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's present in everything Toy Story, basically, is those two always clashing, but in such a fun way. And now this may be the hardest. Do you have, I mean, you've dropped some already, but do you remember what your favorite line?
Favorite line. I mean, yeah, I've dropped a lot. I mean, I will just keep the theme and just say golly Bob Howdy again, because that is literally an earnest. That's an earnestism that just got ripped out. That's a Jim Varneyism more so that got ripped out, appropriated for Ernest and then Toy Story. So I'm just going to go with that.
All right. Well, they have a lot. Would you say iconic or legendary? But I mean, I'd maybe say iconic because, you know, you're at talking point, Toy Story. Mm-hmm. You got to infinity and beyond. You are a toy.
That.
That one.
Yeah.
You are a sad, strange little man.
That one.
You have my pity. One that's I've found is constantly shared on Twitter, the gif of there seems to be no sign of intelligent life anywhere. I mean, picking out of those, I don't know. Depends on the mood. Because
quotable.
Yeah, I think all of those just kind of carry weight in different ways.
Yes.
I mean, you just say though, to infinity and beyond, that one maybe does carry the most weight.
Well, there's going to be a whole movie based. I mean, we have that's the next generation too. We have the Lightyear movie coming, next year,
and that'll be interesting because, of course, I mean, cynical Ryan, when it's anything else, would be like, I don't need a solo Buzz. That's not even the Buzz Lightyear, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Hey, I almost thought that with Joker first too. And that came out and I really liked that. So I'm in
that. Well, yeah, but it's interesting. Cause like that movie more so than like Toy Story 3 is like a in world, like outside the movie, like sign of like our childhood going away too. Or they're like, we're doing this now. We're not going back to old Toy Story. Yeah.
So before we wrap up, because we're just about to wrap up, do you want to say any last words on what the original Toy Story movie, summarize your feelings or thoughts, how it still connects?
Yeah, it was groundbreaking. It's still relevant. It holds up in so many ways. It kicked off an entire industry. And It's one of those movies that I think is always going to stick around, you know, classic or otherwise. And I just feel like this has been a good overview. I think this is only the beginning. It'll be fun to get nerdier as we delve into the other movies. And personally, I'm probably most excited to dig in deep with Toy Story 2, because
there's a fascinating story behind Toy Story 2.
Yeah, and that's like probably the most nostalgic I will be for any movie in the series.
Yep. I hear you. For me, I just, the movie, it's still my favorite Pixar movie. It's a top five favorite movie of mine of all time, because it hit me at just the right age. And then as I get older, you know, I discovered different lines, different jokes had different meanings as I get older. And then I can only imagine, I don't have a child now, but if and when I do have a child, that this movie is going to hit me in a different way yet again.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The movie's just going to, it's going to live on forever for me. And that's why it is one of my absolute favorites. Charming, warm, lovely, funny. It hits all the marks. So this has been a good discussion. This has been a fun discussion, and it's just the beginning. I don't know when we'll get to Toy Story 2, but it's not like it's going to be years away. But this was a fun one. So thanks, Mr. Haas, for joining me for this BOF satellite show, off the beaten path down aisle 33, Toy Story. I don't know. if people want to follow you anywhere else, why don't you plug away?
plug away. Follow me on Twitter at SMB_Ryan. The SMB stands for the Super Mario Brothers Movie Archive website, which you can also follow on Twitter at SMB Movie. I'll just leave it there. Leave it short and sweet.
There you go.
Obviously, if you want to follow this show, the BOF Satellite Show, that's on Twitter at BOF Show, and of course everything's part of the Batman Podcast Network on Twitter at BatPod Network.
Bravo! There you go, all the BOF plugs. If you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at Lauer_Ryan. Lauer spelled like lower. You can follow my postings on BOF Proper, where I've got comic reviews, movie reviews, interviews with Weaver Mayo, Tim Sheridan, writer of Long Halloween Parts 1 and 2. If you want to follow my podcast, The Batman Book Club, a podcast exploring the Dark Knight Library, you can do that at The Batman BC on Twitter. Latest episode is up, and it's with Peter Vera, another BOFer. Let's see, who else didn't we drop? Oh, Garrett Graves, part of BOF. Who else we got? Javi Trujillo is part of BOF. Bill Jett Ramey, the head honcho of BOF. So there we go. We got everybody in, right? I think I said dick shoes. Okay, there we go. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And stay tuned for more Toy Story.
You've been listening to the Batman on Film Satellite Show, BOF's non-Batman pop culture podcast. Follow the show on Twitter at BOF Show. Follow BOF on Twitter at The Batman on Film. For all of Team BOF, I'm announcer Rachel. Authoritative, definitive, the original Batman on Film, established in 1998.